From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the last weekend of June 2019. While Summerfest continues to roll along, here are some of the headliners in the next few days. The Zac Brown Band on Sunday, Michael McDonald and Lionel Richie on Tuesday, and Jennifer Lopez on Wednesday. And that leaves your weekend free to check out the Brewers, who are at home with the Pirates. A Michigan man won the Mega Million lottery and pocketed $80 million, or so he thought. His soon-to-be ex-wife said, "Not so fast, bucko." According to state law, she's entitled to half. Now, most people would be delighted to give up $40 million if that meant you could keep $40 million, but not this guy. He wants it all and wants to go to court. Sounds like his wife may have earned every bit of that $40 mil. And here are just a couple of quick headlines. Armed robbers tried to hold up a Winona, Minnesota bar with a can of air freshener. Just how stinky is that place? 10 Philadelphia police recruits resigned last week after they were caught cheating on an ethics exam. And a Canadian riding his jet ski in the nude got arrested for driving while impaired, you think? In the studio today we have Dave Sandstrom, Steve Giles, Tom Pfaffenfuss, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, we finally broke a three-week winning streak. The stock market traded just slightly lower for the week. NASDAQ down just 0.3% this week, shedding 25 points to close at 8,006. Broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500, gave up an equal amount, 0.3%, shedding 10 points to close at 2941 after setting an all-time high a week ago yesterday. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 130 points, losing 0.5%, mostly on the heels of a pretty good sell-off in Boeing. And we finished the week with the Dow closing this afternoon in New York at 26,589. Year-to-date, pretty decent. Broader markets, S&P 500. Dividends included, up a nice 18.5%. Pretty decent for half the year. Dow Jones Industrial Average, again, weighed down by Boeing, is up 15.4%. Up 7% for the month of June. Best June in decades for the market, more than making up the 6.6% decline that the markets experienced in May. You know, Dave, let's start talking about the bond market. You see yields are plunging. The 10-year Treasury is the lowest in 3 years, just basically 2%. Bond yields in Germany and France, their 10-year sovereign debt, lowest yields ever. So typically when the bond market has yields that are very low, tells you a couple things. One is that they don't expect a lot of inflation down the road. Number two, it's telling you don't expect a lot of robust growth. And on the other hand, as I said just a minute ago, that the S&P 500 hit an all-time high a week ago Thursday. Stocks have been kind of on a tear this week. One of them's wrong. One of them clearly is showing the wrong message. What's your take on that?
Well, Bob, I think you're absolutely right. And historically, you know, a lot of times you look at that and you go with the stock market being right as it plays out. But in this case, when you look at across the board, you look at some of the things you mentioned, especially globally, when it's tied to global growth slowing, some of the things we're seeing in the U.S. economy slowing, it's hard to, I think, come up with compelling reasons for this market to go a lot higher under the current guidelines. So I'm kind of leaning towards the bond market being right in this case, kind of showing the fact that some of these things have peaked growth-wise. We look at the housing market peaking about 2 years ago, automotive sales in the U.S. peaking, revised forecast for GDP for the second quarter, maybe a little bit below 2%. So some of those growth numbers would indicate maybe a little bit more accuracy to that bond market right now.
You know, what you see now, the preliminary estimates for the year after next, but that GDP could actually reaccelerate year after next. So, you know, they again confirmed the 3.1% GDP numbers for the first quarter of the year. For all of this year, The pros are thinking that maybe GDP is going to average about 2.3%, 1.2% perhaps next year, as the effects of the tax cuts really start to wear off, the impact of the trade conflicts really kick in. And I was quite pleased to see from Capital Economics this morning that they're now predicting a 2% GDP rate for the year after next, and they cite specifically that the anticipated interest rate reductions, perhaps starting as early as next month, will really start to kick in and turn things around later next year. To be fair, there's about a 30% chance that we could be in a recession sometime next year. But it was encouraging to me to see, anecdotally anyway, that some of these estimates think that we could just be slowing down quite a bit before we reignite sometime next year.
And a lot of that too, Bob, is going to be predicated upon what does happen with trade, what does happen with tariffs. As we know, the markets in the fourth quarter sold off because of that uncertainty, knowing how things would play out. So as we move forward into the summer, knowing at least a little bit more with respect to tariffs and the impact that they've had with the markets, companies are increasing their prices. Consumers are dialing back on their spending because of those increase in prices. And if we can get past the tariffs and the trade wars, that might change that dynamic as we finish out the summer.
Well, I think you're right. I think Dave is right that perhaps what the stock market is telling you, that they do expect a resolution of the trade, and they do expect the Fed to start lowering rates, perhaps as early as July 30 and 31 when they meet next, and they fully expect that those lower rates will reignite economic growth. So maybe it's possible that they're both right, but just at different times, that the bond market is correctly calling the slowdown this year, and the stock market may, in fact, be correctly calling the anticipated rebound the year after next, quite some time into the future. Tom, let's talk a little bit about, value versus growth stocks. As you know, we were at a meeting together a couple of weeks ago when head of research Kyle Tedding was talking about how some of the high-flying growth stocks have been running into some buzzsaws lately with antitrust issues, privacy issues, the fact that they got so many of their sales from China and China's slowing. And I was pretty interested to see that normally the defensive stocks like real estate investment trusts and utilities did really well recently, which is encouraging. It speaks to the issue of the broader breadth of the market. But the bloom may be off the rose here a little bit for these high-flying growth stocks.
Yeah, I think speaking to the sentiment, what you just mentioned there, Bob, I actually found some charts that highlighted historically what has happened. Looking specifically at, they looked at after yield curve inversions, what has happened, and a lot of times that gets talked about as far as recession concerns and things like that. At least in the past, over the last 25 years, it's also been kind of a signal of a change in trends, of perhaps a change. Though it's happened in the past, doesn't necessarily mean it'll happen in the future, but change in investment trends as far as U.S. versus international stocks, also growth versus value, and to an extent even large versus small cap. But back to your main point of growth versus value, it becomes important not to follow the shiny object of growth and follow those where a lot of that earnings growth comes from, but to pay attention to value, that it could come around back around as maybe a trend is changing.
And to put it in fairly simplistic terms, stock market hit an all-time high a week ago Thursday, yet a lot of these high-flying tech stocks are 10, 15, even 20% off the highs that we saw them hit last summer. So you've got the broader markets hitting all-time highs, but Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Netflix, they're all quite a bit off their highs that we saw from last August. Look at Apple. Apple's give or take 119, right? It was 130-something last summer. So nowhere near their all-time highs. And I think it's interesting you point out the inversion of the yield curve changed leadership. So leadership never repeats itself. So you look at the stocks that have done the best over the last 4 or 5 years, it's pretty unlikely that they're going to continue to lead the markets moving forward. My prediction here is that the names that are the steady eddies of the world, the utilities, the insurance companies, the banks, the telecoms even, that have nothing to do with Asia, that have nothing to do with the slowdown in China, maybe leading the markets for a while. A lot of people are attracted to the dividends that they can get. Pretty easy to get over 3% in dividends. You look at how low interest rates are now. You've got, this is the old days where you bought dividends because they were higher than the bond payouts that you could get, and now we're going back to that. So I think it may show a rotation, and it's important always to point out it's never one side of the boat or the other. You for sure don't want to abandon your growth stocks. But I think at a time when many investors are a little bit overweight that category of the market, it might be opportunistic to shift a little bit to value. If you think the market is getting kind of old age, the benefit of focusing more on value stocks, of course, is they hold up a whole lot better than the growth stocks do, that sink like rocks when the market's going to.
Yeah, and to that point also, Bob, if the market is going to experience more volatility, it's nice to know you're getting that dividend while you're sitting tight hanging out in the more conservative value side of the market.
And Steve, you and I have worked together for a really long time now, 20 years, right? And for almost all of that time, over longer periods where you backtest, value's done better than growth. And it's only been the last couple of years that we do those 30-year backtests, that we take a look at those charts, where growth has edged it out. But, I think back to my old days where I would give entire speeches based on the tortoise versus the hare. And, a lot of wisdom in that fable. And, a lot of people want to come in and bet on those fast rabbits, and the rabbit didn't win in that fable. It's the little turtle one making steady, methodical progress day in, day out, week in, and week out. It has been one of my favorite areas of the market for years, but the growth stocks pretty much elbowed us out of the way. And I think it'd be healthy for the market to rotate into the value. And pretty early to call it, this has only been going on a handful of weeks now, but I think we could be seeing a slight shift in leadership pretty early to call it, though.
Well, Bob, as you know, successful money management does involve positioning your portfolio based upon where you see the ball bouncing. And for the last few years, that ball has certainly been in the growth camp. But as the winds are shifting and growth is certainly coming under some pressure, what with regulations, privacy, and antitrust, and now with the at least more attractive valuations on the value side, perhaps the ball is bouncing back over to the value, and we want to make sure that we pay attention to that.
Dave, last week on the podcast, I was talking about how productivity is starting to increase. Output per man hour worked, or the analogy I always use, how many pens can you make an hour? And, I continue to have conversations with clients that can share firsthand information on why that productivity rate is climbing. A specific example this week came from a lady that is supervising construction of, they're rebuilding Great Lakes Naval Base. It's the only naval boot camp for the U.S. Navy. And that the bricklayers are using robots because they can't find enough bricklayers. And that they're teaching these robots to not only haul brick, but even do some of the finishing work. And what's forcing them into this isn't that they want to rush to embrace technology, but they can't find bricklayers. And I've had similar examples of that, where companies are getting more productive because they can't find help. So I find it curious that it's this low unemployment rate that's forcing companies to think outside the box. How can we make more with fewer people? And then they're just embracing the technology. And the point, of course, is you need more workers and/or to make them more productive to increase aggregate net worth, as you know. And after years of productivity being flat as a pancake, I find it, number one, I'm thrilled that it's finally coming off the mat and it's growing at 2.5%. Anecdotal, it's only been going on for a handful of months yet. But that's one of the more interesting things that I see about the markets now, that you have to have increases of productivity. And, in the old days, we were all taught that productivity wouldn't increase until we didn't have any excess capacity. So there's plenty of excess capacity out there, but you're missing the labor component. And it's this inability to hire that's forcing companies to embrace artificial intelligence, machine learning, augmented reality. And as a money manager, the higher the productivity, a lot of that money drops right into the cash register and makes companies more profitable.
And it's been fascinating to watch, Bob, over this this last expansion over the last 10 years. If you look back historically, you know, the economy grows at give or say 3% a year on average. And over that time frame, you've gotten equal contributions from labor and productivity, about 1.5% from each component. During this 10-year expansion, it's been pretty much all labor, adding people and adding bodies. You want to grow your business, you want to grow your sector, you throw people at it.
And we only grew at 2%.
Yeah, and much shorter, right, or smaller. And so it's, I think it's very encouraging, to your point, to see that big number increase in the first quarter of this year. And even though we're 10 years into this thing and people talk about the fact that this is aging and it's going to be tough to expand it further, maybe that it's encouraging news that maybe we get a little extra growth, a little run out of this thing just because of that productivity is just finally kicking in.
And because it does drop right to the bottom line, you know, directly impacts earnings, and it could be just a lift that we need to see the earnings at this late stage in the cycle. Steve, what's your take on current events? You know, the market's hit an all-time high. Bond yields are plunging. We're 10 years into this expansion. What do you tell clients now about balancing portfolios?
Well, I think the thing that's on most retirees' minds is, of course, whether or not we can continue to meet their income stream. And when we talk about setting aside enough money to give them cash flow for 8, 9, 10 years, making sure that the rest of the portfolio is certainly balanced and, for the most part, conservative stock funds, it does ease the concerns that they might have with respect to current events. Obviously, everybody's worried about what's going on overseas with Iran or North Korea. But those are the things that we can't control, and those are the things that I think we shouldn't focus our attention on, as you like to call it. That's the peripheral noise in the markets. Instead, worry about the things that you can control, and we can certainly control what our allocation is. We can certainly control what our distribution rate is, and if we pay attention to those longer term, everything should turn out just fine.
You know, that point's right on the money, because we all try to be practical when it comes to money management, and the practical nature of money management is to make sure that no matter what plays out, you got your bases covered. The longest recovery in modern history, as you know, was 6 years. Market lost 48% of its value from late 73 to early 75. Took a little over 6 years to recover. That's the outlier. The normal is roughly 2 years from peak to the trough back to the prior peak. Financial crisis took a little over 4 years for most of us to get our money back. So even using that six-year outlier as a rule of thumb, if you follow the rules of the efficient frontier and don't exceed 60 to 65% in stock, you're going to have more than 6 years of withdrawals if you stick to a 4% withdrawal rate, which makes it poetry to me that on average, if you follow the efficient frontiers, you should have enough money in withdrawals for 8 to 10 years, taking you well past the point it normally takes markets to recover. Of course, that's not a guarantee. It's not an assurance that'll happen, but it's so important to have that safe component. You know, I've always made way more money on stocks than I have in bonds. But the nice thing about bonds is if you buy good quality, they're going to be there through thick or thin. You don't ever want to get painted in a corner where you're letting go of some of your life savings at a discount if you got to sell stocks when the market's down. That's my favorite reason to own bonds.
And for investors that know they have enough money set aside to meet those cash flow needs for 8, 9, 10 years, Bob, it really does help them get through those periods of market downturn and heightened volatility, because it's money they know they don't need tomorrow.
And I think when you're looking at situations too where you're getting to the upper end of your comfort zone as far as your stock allocation, if you're pushing the 60 to 65%, and you see some expenditures that you know are on the horizon, you know, you look at the markets now up 15 to 20%, might not be a bad idea now to trim some of that and make sure that that cash is ready to go for those expenditures that you got in the near term coming up.
Well, folks, because this is a podcast, not a video, you can't tell, but the world's largest outdoor music festival is right outside our window now. Summerfest started Wednesday, goes to a week from Sunday. Can almost hear the music as we speak. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.